The Mask, the strange one who lived alone in Mossflower, the otter who was master of many disguises. Chapter 30. Dawn had scarce broken when Logalog put the finishing touches to the main frame of the gate. Martin peered down from the edge of the hole in the mountainside, holding tight to Dinny beside him.
So this is what the other side of the mountain looks like, eh, Din?
Oh, ain't much to be seen, though, Martin.
The sloping side of the mountain was visible, but beyond that, the bottom land was a bed of thick white mist as far as the eye could see. Lord Cavier joined them.
What lies below, I do not know,
he told them.
Thank you, Logalog. Thank you for your good work. Soon my tribe will be safe once more. We will be complete masters of all Bat Mountpit.
Logalog patted the heavy timber frame, made mainly from the wreckage of Waterwing.
Aye, no sign of that owl now, though this gate should keep it away. That had a few sharp prods in its feathery bottom. Don't like owls myself.
The sun was up and shining bright within an hour, but instead of clearing the mist, it seemed to make it thicker. Martin and his friends were eager to continue the quest. Politely, they refused entreaties from the bats to stay as long as they wished, though with a tinge of regret because of the kindness and hospitality shown them by the tribe of Bat Mount Pit. Lord Cavier presented them with haversacks of fresh food and drink. The great bat stayed inside the darkness of the exit hole with his tribe, away from the glaring sunlight. Martin shook him heartily by the paw.
Now put that barrier up as soon as we leave. Better safe than sorry, my friend.
The little bats clung to Dinny.
Fly back through the earth and visit us one day. Visit us one day,
they begged. The mole was visibly moved.
Don't ye fret, little battens. This year mole'll see sometime.
Logalog gave final instructions as to the care and maintenance of the gate. All three then stood for a moment in the awkward silence that often marks the parting of friends. Martin was about to say that Gomph would have composed a ballad for the occasion, but he turned away with a sigh. Adjusting the sword hilt about his neck, he faced the outer world. They began the sloping descent, with Lord Cavier's whispered farewell in their ears.
Our spirit flies with you. May you find what you quest for, what you quest for.
The going proved not too difficult. They dug their paws into the loose scree and shale, half walking, half sliding.
If only Gomph were here,
Martin could not help remarking.
He'd remember the exact words of the Sky Furrow poem. Let me see now. Land lost in mist and grey-brown treachery, or something like that. I can't recall it properly.
Dinny braked himself against a boulder.
Nay, nor do I. Proper old puddin'heads as be.
Logalog took a chunk of rock and tossed it outward. It fell down into the mist, vanishing completely.
Usually some kind of swamp or marshland on the mist like that. We'd best keep our wits about us down there,
he warned. It was midday when they finally reached the bottom land. The mist was dense and high above their heads. It blocked out the sky, leaving the travellers in a world of swirling fog. Dark squelchy moss and slimy weeds carpeted the ground, dotted with wide areas of evil-smelling fungus. Here and there small rivulets ran, as if trying to find a way out of this oppressive region. Dinny gazed into the mist.
Yer, be that summit moving over yon?
They stopped to peer. Logalog rubbed his eyes.
It might be. Then again, it might be the mist playing tricks. If you let your imagination run away with you, all sorts of shapes start popping up.
The travellers leaned against a large humped rock to take their noon meal. Martin broke off some bread.
I've got the strangest feeling that we're being watched,
he said, chewing as he spoke. Dinny tapped the rock.
Degenclaw be a-telling oi that too, Martin.
Behind them, six huge toads, bearing the ends of a twisted reed net, leapt from the top of the rock, passing right over the travellers' heads. They landed square on the ground, neatly trapping the three friends tightly underneath the net. One toad poked a trident at them.
Oak-log, frog-log, bat, catch and caught three here.
Samina pushed her party hard into the fastnesses of Mossflower. She halted frequently to sniff the earth or trace the paw prints in soft ground.
No mistake. This is them, all right. Look here. My traitor brother. carrying something heavy by these deep prints. Keep going. Dawn can't be too far off. We'll give those woodlanders a breakfast they won't forget.
High in a tree above Sarmina's force, Barklad the squirrel sat muttering to himself.
Oh, too many heads to count. Looks like most of Katia has been mobilised to track us down.
He vaulted off across the high green terraces to make his report. Clud pointed with his spear.
Blood spots, milady.
The wildcat queen inspected sticky dark red flecks brushed off on the leaves of a lilac bush.
Otter. That must be the one who tricked us into thinking he was a fox. Patchcoat. He took the arrow that was meant for Gingervere.
Clud ground his teeth.
Patchcoat, eh? I wonder one myself, wounded or not, he's wearing my captain's cloak.
Samina pushed onward.
Take who you please, but Gingervere's mine. Leave him to me,
she ordered. The soldiers marched forward confidently, made brave by sheer weight of numbers. Not far from Camp Willow, the ancient gnarled tree that was its namesake bent lithe boughs over the clear flowing river. Beneath its branches, the dawn light filtered through onto the party who had gathered round the last resting place of the mask. Smooth river boulders in a cairn marked the spot. Flowers and decorated otter slings were laid on the grave in tribute to a fallen comrade. Skipper sighed heavily, turning away to join Lady Amber, who was listening to Barklad's report. Cold fury had overtaken the otter leader's grief. At his insistence, there would be none but otters to face the oncoming hordes of Katia. Lady Amber wisely acceded to her friend's wishes, but not before she had outlined a few plans of her own.
Do what you have to, Skipper, and good luck to you. The whole of Katia is abroad in Mossflower, so be careful. However, this is an opportunity we must not miss. I have sent messengers to Brockhall. No doubt the Formole and his crew would welcome a chance to inspect Katia while the cat's away. I will take my force to make sure they get there and back in safety. Agreed?
Skipper greased his sling with slippery bark and checked the rows of dangerous-looking otter javelins sticking point down into the bank.
Agreed.
Ashleg was first to sight the river, heavily swathed in morning mists from bank to bank.
We've been here before, milady,
he reminded her.
This is where we lost Gloomer. Surely this isn't where they have their headquarters.
The Queen of the Thousand Eyes peered into the mists ahead.
No matter. This is where the trail leads. Here is where they'll be. What's that?
Clud stood forward, brandishing his spear.
It's that otter, milady. Look, the insolent hound is still wearing my cloak. Let me at him!
Samina nodded toward the spectral figure, which stood wreathed in the mists.
Get to it, Clud,
she commanded.
Obviously they know we've been following. I'll check around for surprises. We won't be fooled a second time. Oh, and Clud.
Yes, milady?
See you finish the job properly if you want to wear that cloak as a captain again.
Hefting his spear, Clud advanced on the cloaked figure.
You just leave it to me, Majesty. Right, Patchcoat, let's settle this once and for all,
he challenged. Skipper stepped out of the tendrils of mist, shedding the cloak.
I'm ready for you, weasel. The one you called Patchcoat was my brother. You're not fit to lick his paws. I will give you your cloak back to take with you to the gates of Dark Forest. They have a special place for cowards there.
Stung by the insult, Clud bellowed at rage as he charged. Skipper allowed himself a grim smile of satisfaction. Flexing his powerful limbs, he hurled himself like an uncoiling spring at the oncoming weasel. Disregarding weapons, the two creatures locked together on the ground, snarling and tearing at each other like savage beasts. Martin, Dinny and Logalog struggled helplessly, floundering about in the net like fish out of water. The more they moved, the tighter they were entwined. Martin realised this and lay still.
I am Martin the Warrior,
he called out.
These are my friends, Dinny and Logalog. Why have you done this to us? We mean you no harm. We are only travellers passing through. Turn us loose, please.
The toads turned to each other. They made unintelligible clicking and galloping noises, seeming to find the whole business highly amusing. Their leader jabbed warningly at the captives.
Cur, you're quiet now. Firmouse, damp watch say, come now.
The prisoners were dragged unceremoniously along the muddy ground. Other toads came out of the mist to join the procession. When they finally reached their destination, the captives were surrounded by a veritable army of the creatures. The leader threw the net ends over a stake driven into the ground. He spread his web claw membranes.
Crrr, proxy here. One mole, two mouse, marsh green, say what?
Seated on a huge fungus carved into the likeness of a high throne was a toad bigger than the rest, far more repulsive too. It had no warts and was a slimy wet green colour, its great translucent eyes filmed over as it blinked at the captives. Fireflies danced in opaque plant holders, and four more toads stood guard around the throne with tridents. The big toad gave an ungainly hop down to the ground and stood in front of the trio, blinking ceaselessly, its great wobbly throat pulsating.
What fine damp watch! Fur mouse make happy, marsh green!
Martin decided that politeness was at an end. They were being treated like trophies. The warrior mouse's voice was loud and angry.
See here, marsh green, or whatever they call you! You've no right to treat us like this! Now set us free this instant!
He demanded. The assembly of toads gave a bubbly cry of shock at the blatant disrespect to their ruler. His eyes bulged like button mushrooms.
Speak of what? Mouth shut, mouse fur! Cheeky beast! Take three! Throw in scream all!
The company of toads waddled and hopped excitedly, brandishing their tridents.
Look over there!
Logalog whispered to Martin.
I might have known it wouldn't be spring without those two weeds sprouting again.
It was the newt and the grass snake, Whipscale and Deathcoil. The unsavoury pair saw they were noticed and grinned wickedly.
Do you fancy standing on my tail again, shrew?
You three are for it now.
Diddy shook the net.
Go boil your heads, sloy beasts.
Deathcoil stood almost on the tip of his tail.
Not until we've seen you thrown into the scream hole with the snakefish.
Before they had a chance to find out what Deathcoil was talking about, the trio were dragged along in the net once more. The journey was not so long this time. It was far speedier because the net was hauled by many more toads. They halted at what appeared to be an overgrown well. Its large circular bore disappeared deep into the earth. Thick ferns drooped about the edges, growing down into the pit. Marsh Green came waddling up with the snake and the newt. They were flanked by toads carrying firefly lanterns on their trident forks.
Snakefish feed well. Marsh Green bring you farmhouse.
The toad ruler called down the dark well hole. A toad presented Marsh Green with an elaborately carved trident. He jabbed it ceremoniously at the captives in the net, then jabbed it three times toward the well. The assembled toads flattened themselves against the ground, chanting,
Snake fish, mighty one, stay in scream hole. He's a fur mouse, leave alone, damp watch.
Martin and his friends lay apprehensively listening as the chant grew louder. Suddenly it stopped. The toads holding the net spilled it open, tugging it backward vigorously. Martin, Dinny and Logalog were shot forward through the tracery of overhanging ferns deep into the scream hole. Samina had detailed her archers to scatter volleys into the trees and brush in case of concealed woodlanders. They fired off a desultory salvo, then all else was forgotten as they broke off to watch the battle between Skipper and Clud at the water's edge. Jaws locked, the combatants rolled over and over. Loam and sand flew in all directions as they bit, grappled and kicked, raking each other with heavy claws. The very ground shook at their wildness. Fear hung on the dawn air, blood spattered into the river. It was not too long before Clud realised he was outmatched by the power and fury of Skipper. Now he was fighting for his life. The weasel tried to pull free from the maddened otter, but to no avail. His breath sobbed raggedly in his throat as he strained to reach the spear he had dropped in the first charge. Skipper, aware of what Clud was up to, squirmed over, rolling him in the opposite direction to the weapon. Suddenly, Clud grabbed a pawful of sand and ground it into his opponent's eyes. Temporarily blinded, Skipper furiously tried to clear his vision, unwittingly freeing Clud. Seizing his chance, Clud bounded up and snatched the spear. With a savage scream, he charged at his flawed adversary, levelling the point at Skipper's unprotected neck. Through a sandy haze, Skipper saw the weasel coming. He rolled to one side. As he did, his paw came in contact with the captain's cloak he had shed upon the bank. Sweeping it up and over in one continuous movement, the otter netted Clud head and haunches. Falling over backwards, Skipper felt the breeze of the spear point pass his ear. He thrust upward miserly. All four paws connected squarely with Clud's body. The weasel shot high in the air, enveloped by the cloak, landing with a cry of shock. His fall had been broken upon the otter javelins that stood fixed in the ground. Otter javelins are pointed at both ends. Chaos broke loose. Sarmina hurled her troops forward at Skipper. A band of otters broke cover, stopping them with javelins and sling stones. Skipper bounded gracefully tail over ears into the river, followed by his crew, who took the liberty of rattling a last furious salvo at the soldiers of Katir. Pushed on by those behind, several of the front ranks spilled into the water. Sarmina was among the first to go headlong into the river. Panic overtook the wildcat as she floundered in the water.
Out! Get me out!
She screamed.
Quick, before they lose the bike!
Hurriedly, she was dragged up onto the bank. Further upstream, there was a barking laugh of victory as Skipper's head broke the surface.
The weasel got his cloak back, cat. It's pinned to him.
The river closed in a swirl on the last of the otters. Sarmina raced up and down the bank, snatching spears from her soldiers, hurling them vindictively at the water.
Come out, woodlanders! Stand and fight!
She challenged. Brog, the weasel companion of Clud, had taken the opportunity of extracting the cloak from the javelins and his friend's body. He squatted at the river's edge, washing it through. Few rips, bit of blood. Stale. It should clean up nicely, he thought. Suddenly, the cloak was being pulled into the water. Dragging Brog along with us, Ashleg kicked him soundly on the bottom.
Let go, fool! They've got the pike out!
Brog had never let anything go so quickly. Bella appeared on the opposite bank.
Stay out of our woods, cat,
she said, pointing a blunt claw at Sarmina.
Take your vermin away from Mossflower and leave us alone, or you will be defeated some day.
Sarmina ran to the water's edge, but halted at the sight of a dorsal fin patrolling the river. Her voice was a hoarse scream.
I am the Queen of the Thousand Eyes. I rule all Mossflower. One time I might have shown you mercy, but not now. This is war to the death. Your death, Badger. Archers!
Before an arrow could be strung, Bella had gone. Chapter 31. The scream hole was dark and slimy. Martin, Dinny and Logalog landed with a splash in muddy water. The mole slipped upon a smooth, bulky object.
Yeah, what be that?
He wondered aloud as he spat out fetid water.
Don't hang about down there, matey. Here, reach up and I'll give you a lift.
The voice belonged to Gonf. Martin and his friends looked up. They could not see daylight or hear the toads. Above them was a hole in the pit wall. Gonf stood at its entrance, holding a firefly lantern in his paw. The little mouse thief looked dirty and wet, but as cheerful as ever. Martin was overjoyed.
Gonf, you old thief! Is that really you?
Their long-lost companion shook with silent mirth as he held up a cautionary paw.
Shh, matey! Not so loud! You'll wake up the big fella. Here, grab this vine and I'll pull you up.
Gonf hauled Martin up. Together they pulled Logalog and Dinny to safety. All three shook water from their coats and warmly hugged the little mouse thief.
Bring any rations with you, matey?
Gonf was hungry.
Nay, you tootin' took 'em all.
Gonf looked disgusted.
Oh, that warty lot! I might have known.
Logalog sat in the driest spot he could find.
But how did you come to get down here?
He asked curiously.
We thought you were dead for sure when we lost you at the waterfall.
Gonf puffed his chest out indignantly.
Me? Dead? Not likely. When I went over the falls, I must have been washed right underneath the mountain by the currents. Next thing I knew, I woke up with the snake and the lizard standing over me. Foul reptiles. They'd bound me tail and paw. I was taken up in front of old Green Frog, or whatever they call him. The filthy old swamp hopper. He'd been listening to the snake and the lizard and wanted to know where I did and you three. Of course, I told him to go and roast his fat green behind. That was when he lost his temper and had me chucked in here with old snakefish.
What's this snakefish thing supposed to be?
Martin interrupted.
Bee? He's not supposed to be anything, matey. Snakefish is a giant eel. Big? You never saw the like. He's like a wriggling tree trunk. Here, watch this.
Gonf prized the rock loose from the clay. Leaning out, he hailed it at what looked like a smooth boulder sticking out of the water. In the dim light, The brown muddy mess churned, boiling, as thick coils looped and weaved, thrashing about with untold mice. Gomp shuddered.
That rascal nearly had me. I was saved by the vine hanging from this cave. Good job I'm a prince of climbers. I still keep checking the tip of my tail to make sure it's there. That's how close it was. Still, he's not a bad old sort, providing he keeps his distance. Oh yes, we've even had a conversation, Snakefish and me. He was the champion toad scoffer in this part of the country, until they laid a trap for him and he fell in here. Poor old Snakefish can't get out now. Still, they keep him happy enough by slinging the odd enemy in here. The occasional fish, maybe a dead bird, passing travellers too, of course. Old Snakefish wallops the lot down. Doesn't bother him.
Gomph leaned out, calling to the eel.
I said, it doesn't bother you, does it, big matey?
The surface of the dim water parted with a whooshing upheaval, and the head of Snakefish appeared. It was something out of a nightmare. Thick, wide, silver-black, and the colour of yellow ivory beneath. A massive slab-like head hissed and swayed, revealing countless teeth, pure white and needle-like. Two savage jet eyes watched them with unblinking intensity. Coils of flexible steely muscle rippled and undulated with a life of their own. Snakefish spoke.
Oh, one day I will find my way out of here. Then I will taste the toad flesh again.
Dinny saluted with his digging claw.
That's Opie Doozer. You'm scoff a few for us. Spet you'm passing fond of ye toadin'.
Snakefish clouded his eyes dreamily.
Oh, me? Oh, there's nothing so tasty as a brace of plump toads. Oh, unless it's two brace.
Logalog shifted his paws nervously.
Right first time, sir. Look at us all string and fur. Why don't you slip out for a toad supper?
Snakefish reared up, pushing his coils against the smooth walls of Scream Hole. There was no purchase for the great eel. He slid back into the water.
See, I have given up trying,
he said sadly.
Each attempt only makes these walls more smooth and slippery. Strength alone is useless down here.
Martin had the glimmer of an idea forming in his mind. He decided to risk broaching the matter.
Listen, Snakefish, I have a proposition to put to you. Supposing we help you out of here, would you leave us to go on our way in peace without harming us?
The grey's head submerged momentarily. Emerging again beneath the hole, Martin felt that if Snakefish really tried, he could reach them. The eel slid back a little to reassure them.
If you could free me, I would leave you to go at liberty where you will,
the eel promised.
I would rather eat toad than mouse. Besides, I need to take my revenge on the tribe of Marsh Green. Oh, but you had better decide quickly. Before the passing of another day, I will need to eat. Do you understand me?
The warrior mouse replied for them all.
We understand perfectly, Snakefish. Now, will you leave us alone while we formulate a plan? I'll give you a call the moment we are ready.
The sinister giant slid noiselessly back into the murky waters. Gomph giggled nervously.
Right, mateys. Thinking caps on, or it's mouse shrew and mole pie for dinner tomorrow.
Katia was deserted. The entire garrison had been mobilised to pursue the woodlanders. Habis Germain and Formol stood at the window of Sarmina's high chamber, looking out over the forest. They had discovered little. Katia was as grim and mean as any self-respecting woodlander could imagine it. Damp and oppressive, riddled with dank crumbling rooms and passages, where feeble torches guttered fitfully against fungus and moss-clad masonry. As to supplies, it was useful to know that they were at a low ebb in the fortress. Formol tugged his snout reflectively.
Man, bain't even worth a carrying off, they mangeful victuals.
Moles and mice had searched the stronghold thoroughly. It was an empty carrion nest. Columbine wandered through the deserted armoury with old Dinny. All the weapons had been taken off by the soldiers of Sarmina. The loam hedge mouse curled her lip in disgust.
Oh, what's the point of wandering around a filthy, evil jumble like this?
The venerable grandsire of young Dinny was too busy carrying out his own research to answer. He sniffed the floor between paving cracks, tapped upon walls, dug his claws into rotten beams, all the while muttering to himself.
Brr, I'm getting a feeling my digging claws about this here fortification. I'm bound to have a sniff round yon cells.
Columbine went up to join the abbess in Sarmina's apartments. She could not help noticing the vast difference between the luxurious trappings of the Queen's quarters in contrast to the squalor of the barracks.
Abbess, I think I'd sooner live wild in the woods than endure this dreadful place. Have you seen the way she treats her soldiers?
The abbess ran a thin paw over the tawdry hangings and stained rugs, which Sarmina had spoilt in her rages.
Yes, child, now you know the difference between the way these animals live in comparison to honest woodlanders.
Formal had only one word to express his disgust.
Dirtbags!
The abbess looked pensive. An idea was forming in her mind.
Columbine, this place is deserted. Why couldn't we take it?
Goodness, is this our peaceful abbess speaking?
The young loam hedge mouse replied with a twinkle in her eye.
Actually, I was thinking the same thing myself earlier. The answer is that we are not warriors, and our forces are split. The otters and squirrels are out in the woodlands. Besides, we would find ourselves in the position of being unarmed and without food supplies. How long could a little party like ours last out?
The old mouse shook her head wonderingly.
Goodness, is this our little Columbine speaking? Strategies, supplies, lack of weapons, divided forces. Maybe you missed your true vocation, young maid. Perhaps you would have fared better as an army commander. I bow to your superior military knowledge, General Columbine.
The young mouse laughed heartily and curtsied. Old Dinny came shuffling in. The abbess noticed he was looking highly pleased about something.
Hello, old Din. My, you've got a light in your eye.
Columbine clapped her paws.
Oh, you've found something. Do tell us, please.
The old mole tapped a paw to his snout, winking broadly.
Hey, do you follow I now? I'll show ye a good new way out in this dink.
Mystified, they followed him. As they walked, they talked. And old Dinny imparted the plan to Columbine and the abbess. Lady Amber stood in the thickets with Barklad. Together they watched the east gate. Amber tapped the ground impatiently.
Where in the name of acorns have they got to?
Shall I take a party in and bring him out, ma'am?
Barklad asked, noting her anxiety. Amber looked up to the high chamber window.
No, give it a little while yet. But I tell you, Bark, I don't like hanging about this place. Look. They've not even posted sentries or lookouts at the window. How are we supposed to let them know if the cat and her troops are on their way back? Oh, where have they got to?
Right here behind ye, ma'am.
Startled, the squirrel swung round. There was Formal, the abbess too, and Columbine. Everyone that had gone into Katir, down to the last mole and mouse.
By the fur, where did you lot spring from?
Columbine stroked her friend's grey head.
It was old Dinny. He found a secret way out. We went beneath the cells. It's a sort of cavern with a lake in it. We, or should I say Grandpa Dinny, found a moving slab, and underneath it was a tunnel that travelled along for a while, then went up. We followed it and came up into a hollow oak stump. That one right behind you.
Lady Amber curled her tail in amazement.
Well, I'll be tree-bound.
The abbess gave a right chuckle.
If we put your discovery together with old Dinny's plan, we may have a final solution to the problem of Katir.
Columbine could not help interrupting.
I'll bet Gonf, young Dinny and Martin will have the solution too when they return from their quest with Bo the Fighter.
No doubt they will, child.
The abbess nodded.
But they have been long gone. Who knows when they will return? Bella has said that it is a long journey fraught with danger. Besides, how do we know that Bo the Fighter still lives? I do not wish to alarm you by saying this, but all things being equal, we must have plans of our own. Merely sitting waiting on Boar's return will not help, Mossflower. We must all act to the best of our abilities. Wherever your Gonf is at this moment with Martin and the young mole, you can wager that they will be giving of their utmost. Let us hope that they will be both safe and successful in their quest.
They made their way back to Brockhall that fine spring noon, unaware that they were passing on a parallel course to Sarmina and her returning army. The Wildcat Queen was in a foul temper.
I wouldn't give a pawful of mouldy bread for the lot of you, standing gawping while your captain gets slain by an otter.
From somewhere in the jumbled ranks, a voice murmured impudently.
I noticed you didn't leave forward to help Clud.
Sarmina wailed on the troops in a fury.
Just let me catch the one who said that! You bunch of buffoons couldn't even get a single arrow off at that badger. Oh no, you stood there like a load of frogs catching flies.
As she turned to press on, the voice continued muttering.
Well, you've got the biggest bow. Why didn't you use it?
Sarmina grabbed her unstrung bow from the pine marten and flailed indiscriminately about her.
Ashleg! I want that cheeky beggar found!
She shrieked.
I'm the queen, do you hear? I'll make an example of whoever it is!
The pine marten dropped back, marching at the rear. He bobbed up and down to see if he could catch the cheeky one unawares. When the army straggled wearily back into Kater at midday, Samina's temper had not improved.
Ashleg!
She commanded.
Dismiss this load of nincompoops. Send them to their barracks. I'll be up in my chambers.
Ashleg was stumping his way round to the front when the voice was heard again.
Oh, that's nice, lads. Wish I had comfy chambers instead of a damp barracks.
Sarmina turned to confront the sea of blank faces, but she stifled her reply and contented herself by elbowing her way savagely through the ranks to the main door.
Dinny, I was thinking, could you burrow upwards through the sides of this cave?
The mole tested the walls with his digging claws.
No, he could not, Martin, but he'd need digging claws like I to follow upward if we'd all to get out in here.
Martin patted his friend's velvety back.
Good mole, Din. We only need you to reach the surface. Then you can lower something down so we can all climb out.
Dinny wiped his paws.
Stand out of this year mole's way! You go, oi!
With the mole's undoubted digging skills, Dinny was soon burrowing, inward and upward. Martin reported the plan to Snakefish as Logalog and Gonf backpawed the freshly dug earth out of the way into the pit below. Night and day were of little consequence in the misty world of the marshes. The toads had lingered a while on the edge of Scream Hole, but there was little to see, and their enjoyment was marred by the fact that no screams issued from the well. One by one they drifted off, back to the court of Marsh Green. Deathcoil and Whipscale stayed, however. They sat by the scream hole, waiting to hear the cries of their foes as Snakefish did his grisly work. The newt felt the stump of his new growing tail.
What's happening down there? Has the Snakefish gone to sleep?
He snarled. Deathcoil stretched leisurely on the ground.
Patience. Have you ever known any creature to escape what happens in the scream hole? Snakefish is probably feeling sluggish from lying in that muddy water for so long. He'll liven up when the hunger drives him. You'll see. Sit down here. Wait a bit.
The unsavoury pair stretched out side by side. They had been dozing for some considerable time when the earth beneath them began trembling. Deathcoil pulled to one side, rearing up.
Did you feel that? The ground shaking.
The newt scampered out of the trembling area.
Quick! Let's get out of here!
His companion slithered behind.
No, wait. It's only that one spot,
he called out.
The ground is quite still over here. Let's get behind that rock and see what happens.
In a short while, two digging claws and a moist snout broke through the ground surface. Young Dinny emerged from the earth, shaking soil from his coat. Going to the edge of the scream hole well, he called down.
Don't worry, soon I'll be out in there. Over.
The spies behind the rock slithered away to inform Marsh Green and his toads of what they had seen. Sarmina slept heavily after the night spent in Mossflower Woods. The nightmare visited her dreams again. Once more, she was engulfed by cold, dark, rushing water. It flooded her senses as she fought feebly against the muddy, engulfing tide that filled nostrils, ears and eyes. At the very moment when she felt all was lost and drowning was inevitable, she came awake with a start. Stumbling heavily, she slumped on the floor, pouring the solid stones to reassure herself. Stone was real. It was good. These stones belonged to her, Queen of the Thousand Eyes. She looked gratefully at the floor. That was when she saw the paw prints in the dust. Two mice and two moles. Fortunately, Ashleigh was halfway up the chamber stairs when he heard the Queen screeching his name. As quickly as his wooden limb would allow, he hop-skipped the remainder of the distance, bursting into the chamber. Ashleigh found himself confronting a Sarmina he had not encountered before. The wildcat sat on the floor, hunched up in a cloak that had once belonged to her father. She was rocking back and forth, gazing intently at the stone floor. Ashleigh closed the door and bowed apprehensively.
Your Majesty?
Sarmina did not look up.
Mice and moles? Search this room for mice and moles.
Immediately, my lady.
Ashleigh did not stop to question the orders, knowing how dangerous Sarmina's mood could become. He set about the task, peering into cupboards, looking beneath the table, behind the wall hangings and drapes. The Pine Marten searched the entire room thoroughly.
No mice or moles here, my lady,
he reported. Sarmina sprang up, pointing imperiously at the door.
Then go, search the whole of Katia.
Ashleigh saluted and hobbled swiftly to the door.
No, wait!
He halted, not sure of which way to turn next. Sarmina was smiling at him. Ashleigh gulped visibly as she put a paw about his shoulders.
Ashleigh, where is Gingivere?
He escaped, Majesty. You followed him yourself,
he replied, puzzled.
Oh, come now. You don't fool me.
Sarmina chuckled almost good-naturedly.
First, it was those two hedgehogs that escaped. But they didn't really. They were here all the time. Then there was the fox, who was really an otter. Now, my very own room is covered in the tracks of woodlanders. Come on, out with it, old friend. You can tell me.
Ashleigh began to be very frightened.
Lady, I'm sorry, but I don't know what you're talking about. I'm only Ashleigh. I served your father faithfully, and now I obey and serve only you.
Sarmina smiled knowingly.
Completely loyal to all my family, eh, Ashleigh?
Oh, yes, indeed, my lady.
The murderous claws shot out, burying themselves into the Pine Marten's shoulder through the feathered cape he wore. Sarmina's whiskers brushed against his face as she snarled.
So that's it. You're helping my brother now. Gingivere never really escaped, did he? It was all a trick. He's still here with those woodlanders. They're turning my army against me. Maybe he was with me all the time I was in the forest looking for him. He's a sly one, that brother of mine. I'll bet it was him who pushed me into the water when the otters loosed the big pike.
Ashleigh's face was a mask of frozen agony. The claws dug deeply in him. Blood was staining his cloak. Suddenly, Sarmina released him and scrubbed furiously at herself with the cloak she was wearing.
Oh, deep, cold, slimy, dark water,
she muttered incoherently. Ashleigh backed quietly out of the chamber. The wildcat was oblivious of his departure. She was battling the watery torrents in her imagination. As the Pine Marten hobbled swiftly down the stairs, his queen's ravings echoed about the spiral stairwell.
Stay away! Stay away! You won't get me! I won't come near the water!
Ashleigh's mind was made up. He could not stop a moment longer. Sarmina was a mad queen. Katia was a place of danger to those who stayed there. The late afternoon sun poured down over the ramparts of Katia. Silence made it frightening to the departing Ashleigh. The large areas of dark shadow and sunlit stillness unnerved him. He had cast aside the plumed scarlet cape, exchanging it for a dull brown homespun cloak. Hurrying across the deserted parade ground, Ashleigh slipped through the gates and began walking south, away from Sarmina, Mossflower, and dreams of ambitious conquest. Maybe there was somewhere under a different sky where he could find a new way of life. Maybe somewhere there were friends waiting who knew how to live simply without delusions of grandeur. Perched in his high spruce, Argilor opened one eye. Never too proud to scavenge, the eagle had satisfied his hunger with the results of the confrontation at the river. Argilor's eye closed again lazily. Feeling full and tired, he slept on in the mistaken hope that everything comes to him who waits. Ashleg had flown the coop, that is, if a pine marten with a wooden leg does ever fly. Dinny counted himself lucky. He had found the woven rush net that had carried them to Scream Hole. Securing one end to a tree root, he pushed the remainder over the edge of the pit.
You're below! Grab an hold of the net, Martin!
Unfortunately, the net fell short of the traveller's grasp. From above, the mole's voice was calling urgently.
Brr! Hasten now! I hears they toad bags are coming!
Gonf jumped up and down with frustration.
Think of something quick, mateys!
Snakefish poked his massive head up.
Sit on my head. I think I can reach it.
What? Not likely.
Logalog backed into the cave.
Hurry! They nearly here!
Dinny called. Sitting at the edge of the cave, Martin placed his paws on the huge reptilian head and braced himself against a skull ridge beneath the smooth skin.
Push me up, snakefish.
The great eel thrust upward, slid back slightly, then with a colossal effort reared out of the water and shot up like a bolt. Martin grasped the net, keeping his purchase on the eel's head.
Quick! Bite!
Snakefish's teeth clamped onto the bottom of the net. He hung there a moment, then began bunching his coils, the rough underskin finding contact with the fibres as he weaved his sinuous body into the meshes of the net. Martin pulled upward. Snakefish secured himself and called.
I can make it easy. Show yourselves, you two below. I'll loop my bottom coils around you and lift you up with me.
Logalog and Gomf stood clutching each other, their eyes shut tightly as they felt themselves enveloped in steely coils and lifted effortlessly. Marsh Green and his toads loomed out of the cottony mists. Three of them waddled forward, trying to capture Dinny as the mole flayed about with heavy digging claws.
Grr, he don't come near my slimy toad bags,
he warned. Deathcoil and Whipscale noticed too late the net fastened at the edge of the scream hole. Martin came leaping over the edge, loosing stones from his sling. Fast and accurate, he bounced the rock off Marsh Green's head, knocking him flat. Gurgling screams of horror greeted the next arrival from the pit. The head of Snakefish appeared, dripping like some primeval monster from the abyss. Slitted eyes and white rows of teeth, confronting the terrified assembly.
Toad flesh!
With a bunching serpentine motion, the slayer of the swamps pulled himself clear of the pit, shedding his passengers in the same movement. Gonf and Logalog sprang up, battling despite their bruised ribs. Pandemonium took over as Snakefish struck like a thunderbolt into the nearest group of toads. Regardless of tridents and firefly lanterns, the giant eel went about the business of satisfying his immense hunger. Martin turned away, sickened by the grisly spectacle.
Are you all right, Din?
He called anxiously.
Quick, Gonf, Logalog, let's get out of here right now.
Gonf stared wildly into the mists.
Ah, but which way, matey?
Who are? There's nearly showy.
Young Dinny had a fierce headlock on the groggy Marsh Green. Martin grabbed a trident and poked the toad chief.
Good mole, Din. Come on, you. Lead the way due west, or I'll stick you on this oversized dinner fork and feed you to snakefish.
Marsh Green waddled off, pleading mournfully.
Mossflower, not kill Marsh Green. Show you where to go.
In a short space of time, they were blanketed on all sides by a mist so heavy it drowned out even the far-off squeals of Snakefish's victims. Logalog watched the green bulk of the toad waddling ahead.
Well, at least he seems to know which way to go. What's next in your rhyme, Gonf?
Without hesitation, Gonf reeled off all of Skyfurrow's lines.
Or feathered brethren of the air, fly straight and do not fall. Onward cross the wet gold flat, where seabirds wheel and call.
Martin prodded Marsh Green lightly with the trident.
Do you know that place?
The defeated toad chief turned, blinking his eye films.
Not far, shorebird, seabird eat you, eat me.
Martin leaned on the trident.
Oh, stop moaning, Greenbottom. We'll let you go when we're free of this mist, though it's more than you deserve.
Eventually, they reached a clear running stream. They drank some water while Dinny dug up edible roots.
Brr, rootin'. They bain't no deeper never, boy. No, sir.
Gov perched on a rock.
Don't worry, matey. If we ever come out of all this in one piece, I'll steal the biggest pie in all Mossflower, just for you.
Dinny closed his eyes dreamily.
A right big un, and all for this year more.
Gov broke into song.
It will be great, I'll watch you, mate, and you can dive right in. But don't sing with your mouth full, this pie is all for din. A crust as light as thistle down and filled with all your dream. Fresh vegetables, the best of fruit, all floating round in cream.
Dinny lay upon his back, waving stubby paws.
Oh, joy! Oh, happiness! And all for I say.
The trek was long and wearisome. Time stood still in the land of the mists. Martin longed to see natural daylight again, be it bright or sunny or clouded and rainy. They were negotiating a particularly soggy stretch of ground when Logalog remarked to Gonf.
Here, do you reckon things have gone a bit darkish?
Gonf jumped onto a tusk of dry reeds.
That's probably because night time's coming on, matey.
Martin pointed.
Look, I can see the sky.
Sure enough, the mists were beginning to thin. Pale evening sky was plainly visible from where they stood. Gonf made a further discovery.
See, on the other side of this grass, the sand. Looks like miles of the stuff.
Hurriedly, they jumped onto the tussock to confirm Gonf's sighting. Behind them, Marsh Green picked up the trident and waddled off back into his domain of swamp and mist. The questers gazed in wonder at the scene before them. On the horizon, the sun was sinking in a sheen of pale grey and dusty crimson. Martin's paw shot up, pointing northwest.
Look! The flames of Salamandastron!
Chapter 32. That same evening, the Corrim assembled in the main room of Brockhall. There was much to be discussed. Goody Stickle bustled about laying the table, with cogs firmly attached to her apron strings. The little hedgehog did not complain. Besides, speaking through a mouthful of hot acorn scone dripping with fresh butter and damson jam was not quite the form for budding warriors and daring escapers. He waved in passing to Ferdy, who was seated in a deep armchair with Ben Stickle. Between bites of his scone, Ferdy related a highly coloured version of their adventures.
So me and Cogs broke the door down and pounced on these three weasels, or was it stoats? No, they were weasels. Anyhow, there were six of them. Great, ugly vermin. Oh, did we ever give them what for? The Wildcat Queen was there, but she took one look at us and ran away. Good job, too. Do you know, Ben, me and old Cogs there, we had to carry four squirrels off through the trees. Or was it otters? No, it was squirrels, I'm sure. Saved them from those Katia soldiers, though.
Ben Stickle wiped jam and crumbs from Ferdy's mouth.
Must have made the pair of you powerful hungry. You haven't done anything but eat since you got back, except talk, that is. Are you sure you never chattered any of those stoats to death?
When the table was laid, silence fell as Bella entered the room.
My hall is your home,
she said.
Please fill your platters and eat the excellent food. Thank you, Goody Stickle, for this splendid table.
There was an immediate clatter of serving and good humour.
Pass that deeper than ever, pie. Mind you don't fall in.
Oh, is that leeking onion broth I smell?
Fruit pie. Ouch, it's up.
Here, cool it down with some of this cream.
Pass the butter, please.
Nut pudding. My old mum used to make this.
I remember Gump finching it from her oven.
Here, have a go at this quince and apple crumble.
Hey, you used all the cream.
I say, Goody, you must give me the recipe for your plum pudding.
Ask your gran, she gave it to me.
Now, which will I have? October ale, cider or buttermilk?
None. You're fat enough, Ben Stickle.
A pleasant time was passed eating the celebratory supper. When the dishes were cleared away, Abbess Germain stood up.
Praise silence for our host,
she called. Bella took the floor.
Where are Ferdy, Cogs, Spike and Posy?
Ben pointed in the direction of the dormitory.
Well abed and snoring like champions, ma'am.
Bella bowed her head.
Then let us give a moment of silence and thought to the memory of a very brave otter, the mask. without whom none of tonight's joy would have been possible.
A respectful silence followed, broken only by an audible sniff from Skipper. Bella took a sip of buttermilk, then she wiped her eyes on the back of a heavy paw.
Now to business. First, let me say it's been a good day in many ways, mainly because Ferdy and Cogs are back safe with us. Also because we have a new friend in our midst, Gingervere. I'm sure you will all join me in saying that our home is his for as long as he chooses to stay here.
There was a round of applause. Gingervere stood and bowed.
Thank you, Bella, and you too, my friends. But this cannot be,
he said sadly.
Salmina is a very dangerous creature. My presence here would only endanger you all. I would never forgive myself if any of you suffered because of me. Tonight, I will stay with you. But tomorrow I will leave at first light to go eastward through Mossflower, far away from Katir and all it stands for. I could not stay here, knowing that I would be adding to your problems. If Zarmina knew that I was here with you, she would go mad for revenge on us all, and who knows what evils her dark mind could think up. Somewhere beyond Mossflower, I will make a fresh start. Thank you for all your help and kindness. All my life, wherever I am, I will carry the memory of my woodland friends deep in my heart. If the time should arrive when I can return the good treatment you have shown me, then rest assured, you will not even have to ask. I will help in any way possible, for I owe the woodlanders of Mossflower a deep debt of gratitude.
The wildcat sat down amid silence, which suddenly gave way to loud applause for his noble words. Ben Stickle shook him firmly by the paw.
Mr. Gingervere, sir, it'll break Furry and Cog's little hearts to know you've gone away. But one day, I'll tell them when they're old enough to understand. Thank ye for looking after my little hog, sir.
Bella banged upon the table.
As you are aware,
she continued,
our friends from Loamhedge and the Four Mills crew risked life and limb to find out about Katir. Old Dinny, I believe you've something to tell us.
The ancient mole tugged his snout to Bella, then spread a barkcloth scroll across the table.
Now, this year's Coatir, see? We've been a-comin' and a-goin' all the wrong ways. Now, see here, this'n's a map of Blow Cells. They's a girt cave and lake under Coatir. Also a tunnel what'll lead ye out into an hollow stump in woods.
There were murmurs of wonderment from the onlookers. Old Dinny wrapped a digging claw on the tabletop.
Oh, Formol and I been a-plannin'. He'll tell about it. I bent one for a speech.
Formal threw up his paws and announced in a clear no-nonsense tone.
Flood her out! Charmania won't stay in no floating house.
Hubbub broke out. Columbine rushed to Formal's side, waving the scroll aloft.
Please, listen to what I have to say!
She shouted over the noise. Abbess Germaine looked proudly at her ward as she began to speak.
I was with Formal and old Dinny when we made the plan. Let me explain. First, it relies on the fact that Katir lies in a land depression. Mossflower Woods itself is actually on much higher ground. The moles have studied the landfall.
Columbine laid the scroll out, pointing at two areas of the table, as if referring to a larger map.
Over here and over here. The river Moss runs on a northeast course through the woods, then takes a sharp bend to the west. Sometime in the past, there must have been a large lake where Katir now stands, but this dried up when the river changed its course. We have since found the remains of that lake in the cave beneath Katir.
Lady Amber did not see the point.
But how does that help us, Columbine?
Let the maid tell it,
Skipper whispered in her ear.
I think I've guessed the plan, though.
If the moles were to dig from where the river is closest to Katir,
Columbine continued,
they could make flood tunnels from the banks of the River Moss down to the lowland and straight into the cave beneath Katir.
Realisation dawned upon Lady Amber.
Then the old lake bed would fill up again.
Excited shouts rang out.
They'd be flooded!
The deer would sink beneath the lake!
Good riddance too, I say!
Skipper bounded up onto the table.
If we can make sluice gates, me and my crew will sink them on the riverbank to hold the water back until the tunnels are complete.
Lady Amber leapt up beside him.
Leave it to the squirrels, Skip. We'll build your floodgates. You just see to it that they're sunk properly into the banks.
Formal was not the greatest of leapers, but he clambered up on the table besides Amber and Skipper.
Hower! And us moles will dig holes. We'll tunnel for ye, boy, okay us well.
Columbine thought the cheering and paw thumping would never stop All around her, woodlanders were dancing, hugging each other and whooping at the top of their lungs. Bella had to pound the table for a long time until order was restored.
Congratulations, Corrim. I think it's a good plan,
she announced.
Best of all, it will save open warfare and loss of life. Now, does every creature present agree to the plan?
There was a mass shout of approval. Every pawn in the room shot up.
Aye!
Then we shall carry out this plan. We must, for I fear that Martin and his friends are long overdue on their return. Having said that, I do not wish any of you to feel downhearted, for who can calculate the journey to and from Salamandastron? We must hope and keep the faith in our friends' promise to carry out their mission. Maybe one day, not too far from now, I will see my father, Bor the Fighter, come striding through Mossflower Woods, along with Martin, young Dinny and Gonth, to lead us to victory. Wherever the questers and my father are this day, let us wish them good fortune.
A rousing cheer rang through Brock Hall as Bella sat down and crossed paws with the Corrim leaders. Abbess Germain had the final word at this meeting.
Yes, friends, good fortune to those who traverse afar, and good fortune to us all. I think the plan is a good one,
the frail old mouse told the assembly.
Even I and my brothers and Loamhedge, unused to fighting and war, can see that this will avoid unnecessary bloodshed on both sides, for friend and foe alike. A death is always a death. Bloodshed is an awful thing. What we are striving for is peace. Keep this thought uppermost in your minds. If I had a wish, it would be that we lived in harmony with those at Katir. But this cannot be. So let me say again, good fortune to the lovers of peace and right. Let liberty and freedom be the legacy that we leave to those who follow us in the seasons to come. May they find true peace in Mossflower.
There was a reverent silence for what was, indeed, a heartfelt prayer. The four travellers were hungry. They had risen before dawn and were on the way through the low sand dunes where little else grew but tough sand grass. Belts were tightened after the previous night's meagre supper of a few roots which Dinny had managed to forage. The mole tried digging in the sand for edible material. He rubbed grit from his eyes with weary paws.
Grr! Be no good digging in this slidey sand. Might as well try digging holes in a river.
Gonth wiped the dry paw across his mouth.
I'm thirsty more than anything, mateys. What I wouldn't give for a good old beaker of cold cider right now.
Martin trekked on doggedly.
Look, it's no good going on about what we haven't got. We'll just have to keep our eyes peeled until food comes along. Here, let me show you an old warrior trick my father taught me.
He rummaged some smooth pebbles from his sling pouch.
Try sucking one of these. I know it isn't as good as a drink, but a pebble will keep your mouth moist and stop you drying up.
Being woodlanders, they were not used to travelling through soft sand. Even Logalog, who had made such a journey before, found the constant sinking of paws into dry, shifting grit very tiring. All four soon sat exhausted on top of a dune. Martin picked up some sand, letting it run through his paws. He scanned the distance to where the mass of rock stood, but there was no light issuing from it in daytime. Gonth spoke his thoughts aloud.
There stands Salamandastron, mateys, and here we sit, as far away from it as ever. Not a crust nor a drink between us, and sand all round. It's certainly hard going.
Logalog stood up, brushing his fur free of sand.
Wait here. I've travelled in sand before. I may be able to help.
He scrambled off among the dunes. Dinny scooped a small hole. He watched it fill up again.
My old grandfather Dinny'd never believe this. Stand on my tunnel.
Martin stretched out upon the dune.
Well, at least we've come this far. Don't worry, mates. We'll make it somehow.
Longalog returned, carrying four thick pieces of wood, branches he had found at the edge of the dunes.
Here, trim these up,
he told them.
They'll make good walking staves to help us through the sand.
They set about trimming the branches with teeth, claws and knives. Then they set off again. With the staves, the going was slightly better. Every once in a while, they spotted a small toad or a frilled newt from a distance, but the creatures would either ignore them or scuttle off among the sandhills. There was also the odd small bird which had to be shooed off with staves when it became too inquisitive. Logalog found some soft grass with a milky sap, and they chewed it as he conjectured what lay ahead.
Pretty soon we'll be out of these dunes and onto the firm sand. Maybe then I'll find something to eat. No water, though. Trouble is, most things on the shore taste salty, and that makes you want water even more. Oh, test the sand with your staves as we go. Here and there you may find sinking sands. Watch out for those big seabirds too, gulls and such. They'll gobble up anything at all. Show them you're not afraid. Whack out at them with your staves. Then they'll leave you alone. Now, if you see any pools of water, don't drink from them. It's all seawater, full of salt. Tastes very nasty. One last thing, stick together and don't wander off.
That all? Nothing else?
Gonf laughed and waved his staff.
Good. Then what are we lagging for?
To their amazement, the mouse thief skipped off singing.
I mustn't drink the water and there may be naught to eat. Those gulls may see a mouse thief as just a tasty treat. I step out bravely on the quest across this funny land. And when I disappear, they'll say, he's found the sinking sand.
Nothing keeps our Gonf down for long.
Martin laughed.
Come on, let's press on.
They came out of the dunes at mid-afternoon. Before them stretched the shore, flat, solid sand, dotted with small rocky outcrops. The sun glinted like gold leaf on the shimmering sea. Logalog ignored it and walked on. His three companions, however, could not help stopping momentarily to stare in awe at the distant reaches of mighty water. It staggered the imagination of woodlanders who had never witnessed such a spectacle. Dinny could scarce credit his first sight of the sea.
I sees it, but I don't believe it. Where do it all come from, Clog?
They say it's always been there.
The shrew shrugged.
Like the sky and the ground. See this sand here with ridges on it like little waves? Well, that's where the tide water comes up to. You'll probably see it flooding in soon. Keep your paws on the smooth sand here, this side of all these shells and such like. That's called a tide line.
Dinny was fascinated with the shells. He picked lots of them up. When he could carry no more, he would throw them away and start his collection afresh. Without warning, a black-headed gull swooped down at them. All four fell flat upon the sand. Logalog lashed out with his staff, catching it on the beak, and as it soared away, Martin hit it hard on the wing with a sling stone. The gull wheeled, screaming angrily. More seagulls flew in to investigate. Soon the four friends were hard-pressed, defending themselves against aerial invaders. Waving his staff at an oyster catcher, Martin called to Logalog.
I thought you said they'd go away if we showed them we weren't afraid of seabirds.
Logalog thwacked a common gull across his webbed claws.
You can never tell with these birds. Quick, let's make a run for it. There's some rocks over yonder.
Waving their staves furiously, they dashed along the beach to where a rocky outcrop thrust up from the sand. Finding a fissure between the rocks, they huddled in together. The gulls wheeled and circled a while, screeching threateningly, diving toward the rocks, but sheering off at the last moment. Finally, they gave up and flew off in search of other, easier prey. Martin poked his head out into the open.
All clear. They've gone now,
he reported. Logalog climbed swiftly to the top of the rocks.
Look, mate, a rock pool. Get the fishing tackle out.
Locked tightly in by the rocks, there was a beautiful miniature lake of deep sea water, crystal clear. They sat on the edge, gazing into the colourful depths.
Look, the shrimp! Just like Skipper and the crew get from the River Moss!
Gonf exclaimed.
What's that, Logalog?
Where? Oh, that. I think it's called a starfish. Not very good to eat, though. See here, attached to the rock. These are limpets. They're a bit chewy to eat, but they'll keep us going.
Dinny shook his head.
Nay, Clog. Them shells like ye picking up out of sand.
The mole was surprised when Logalog managed to prise one loose with his knife. He scooped the flesh out and cut it up, giving them each a portion.
Chew on this,
he invited them.
Go on, it's not poison.
Gonf pulled a face at the unappetizing limpet flesh, but bravely he popped it into his mouth and began chewing.
Tastes very salty,
he commented.
I bet you could chew this until next harvest came round and it'd still be bouncing off your teeth. Best swallow it in one gulp.
Martin found some seaweed which tasted quite mild.
Hey, try some of this. It's like Goody's cabbage with a bit too much salt on. Not bad, though.
Between them, they explored the different tastes of rock.